This is another damn podcast about digital asset management. I'm Henrik de Gior. Today I'm speaking with Joe Bahana. Joe, how are you?
Great. Hi.
Joe, how are you involved with digital asset management?
Well, personally, I've been implementing digital asset management since about 1997. My first project with DAM, when I was working at a company called Image Inc., I was actually implementing a product called Frazia, which was a French-based solution. I had way back then experience implementing products like MediaBank and North Plains Telescope. I had implemented at a number of locations around that time as well. And currently, actually, I founded DPCI, which is a technology company that implements content solutions. Well, I founded that in 99, and we've been doing digital asset management projects ever since with a wide variety of digital asset management products for a whole variety of use cases as well.
And how do open source digital asset management or DAM solutions stack up today?
Well, you know, we have to look at it in a few different ways. The first is the business of open source DAM. The second, you would have to look at kind of the legal underpinnings of those solutions. And then the third would be the technology. And some people say, well, let's take a look at the technology real quickly first, right? But I think that's kind of a mistake. One of the reasons why we look at the business is that the open source DAM projects are very different from the open source web content management solutions out there. CMSs such as WordPress or Drupal or Joomla or Plone are principally anywhere between a very, very large collection of contributors globally to those projects to maybe a little more modest contribution base. But generally, it's anywhere between a few hundred people and thousands of people contributing to the innovations of these open source projects. So they've taken firm foothold into the rubric or fabric of not only our country, but globally, the way web content management innovations are happening. In the case of digital asset management, not as much. You do have solutions that have been created out of Europe, out of the UK, here in the United States, that are, you know, there's a couple of folks that are working on it that might, you know, friends or colleagues, or you'll have companies that are behind the product with their own resources. And so the solutions themselves haven't necessarily taken root as global initiatives. That doesn't mean it's not going that way, because what's happening is you're starting to see more of what happened 10, 12 years ago in the CMS world starting to happen in the DAM world. The reason why it's not going to happen as rapidly is, to me, digital asset management is a little bit like the plumbing in your and my walls. It's nice when it's working, right? But it's not the sexiest thing in the world. The thing that everybody cares about is how nice does your house look. And so it's kind of like the CMS. Because the CMS is the presentation of your content, as well as the ways in which you develop the content, so the workflows and so forth, and obviously no CMS is created equal. With respect to DAM, principally companies use digital asset management systems for archive and retrieval of their assets. Now that's a simplified notion of what DAM should do, because you and I both know there's a huge number of reasons people implement DAM, ranging from selling content through storefronts to integrating DAMs with CMSs or CRMs or ERPs and so forth. In the case of media companies where they're selling their content, whether it's through rich media like video or live streaming, these things obviously are the core of their business. It's not just about archival, but it's about real work in progress and delivering that content across multiple channels. So the pace of invention in the open source world, from a business standpoint, is certainly not as rapid yet, and it's not as sexy. And so there's one project that we're involved with for a media company, actually they're headquartered here in New York City, where they had been veterans of a couple of different proprietary platforms. They had spent millions on a couple of different solutions, and they made a determination that they were going to try an open source implementation. So they're doing a good amount of work, to having us actually do some cool customizations for them to add on top of the open source solution. The question always is, what we like to do in open source is we like to contribute back to the community, right, however small or big it is. And we oftentimes will go to that customer and say, hey, as a precursor to our signing on, do you have any objections to us contributing these solutions out in an open source way? That gets to the business aspect of it. And the other part of the business aspect of it is operationalizing DAM. You know, for companies that have had experience with proprietary vendors, some of their vendors have 24/7 support. Some of them, not so much. The DAM vendors can be smaller companies in some cases, and so they don't necessarily have the resources. I mean, when you have a president of a company answering the phone at 11 o'clock at night to support you, that's generally not a good sign. Although some of the presidents of these DAM companies are absolute geniuses, so it's always a pleasure to talk to some of them, but it isn't a scalable model. Operationalizing maintenance and support, it's something that some of the proprietary vendors don't do that well. But if you look at it in the CMS world, when you think about the kind of services that you can get out of an Acquia, let's say, in Drupal, which is commercial support of Drupal, and there are other alternatives on that side as well, those types of things aren't necessarily fully hammered out yet in the open source world, because businesses behind the open source DAM projects are sometimes, they're not matured yet. They may be smaller groups. So I think that's going to change over time. But the second point was this notion of the legalistic implications of open source. Not all open source is created equal or licensed equally. You've got different licensing schemes out there, right? A very common one is the GNU GPL, right? And that you hear that about that one a lot on the web CMS world. And DAM, quite a number of them take advantage of the lesser GPL, LGPL, which has some limitations. So these things people have to really reflect on when they're getting involved. Or, you know, do they want to do an open source implementation with something that where there may be some restrictions? You know, I also look at these products. Does the company who is creating it, you know, are they paying lip service to open source? But then you start to think, well, do they have all their documentation out there online? Can you really readily download and install that product?
Yep.
So, you know, you have to, if you're really open source, you got to behave like open source, which to me means freely downloadable and installing and freely available documentation, right? And then it's your prerogative to decide whether you want to purchase services from company or whichever individual. So the legalistic application of it is quite important when people are reflecting on open source. Now we get to the technical, and this is the one everybody really concentrates on first. But I personally tell people, ask me, don't even look at the products if you can't first look and see what the business and the legal implications are of the solution you're about to go forward with. The open source DAMs are approaching, in general, the work group functionalities of products out there in the marketplace. If you look at solutions like ResourceBase or Entermedia, Resuna as well, and you know, there are a couple of more. I'm not trying to plug these products, I'm simply giving as examples that these solutions are starting to meet the needs of work group digital asset management, which would be considered, for me, the ability to import either individually or batch of a whole variety of digital asset types, you know, on ingestion, to be able to automate the creation of thumbnails and previews, and even evoke certain recipes for conversions of the assets. If you, let's say, upload a PSD or an EPS file, then you can set up recipes for conversion to JPEGs at certain pixel widths and depths. The ability to also capture metadata information. Things aren't all created equally, but you know, the ability to capture XMP data, metadata, for example, is something that is available in several of these products. In one case, we actually did some customizations where we have some pre-processing of assets within the Adobe Bridge for a customer, and then the assets are going into their open source DAM, which is just, it's a phenomenal thing because they're kind of batch modifying with some extended XMP metadata with their own panel within their Adobe Creative Suite products, and that information is getting ingested into those open source DAMs. So these kinds of basic functionalities are available, and it's really exciting because they're there. They're professionally, we've actually implemented quite a number of these kinds of projects, and they're working in, you know, for a year or 2 years. They're in business, in use. And the other thing that I find really exciting is that some of these, you know, the whole promise of open source to me is you don't have to say, mother may I. The whole idea of innovation and ingenuity in software, in the open software world, open source software world, is the ability to just step up and say, I want to create something of value that's available or that I need for the context that I need it, without saying, hey, may I please do that? And then somebody saying, yeah, sure, but pay $20,000 for an SDK and sign this agreement that you won't do this or that. And so with open source, you could do it. Now, a couple of the open source products have robust web services and published APIs that essentially allow you to do anything you want, you know, ranging from connecting the DAM to a product like Drupal or WordPress, or connecting it to your CRM if that's what you needed to do, and so on. So that, to me, is the most exciting aspect. In one case, we did a project down in Atlanta for a company where they had this huge infrastructure. They needed to just automate the production of real estate guidebooks. And so we have this integration of, in that case, it was a product called EnterMedia, with, believe it or not, a whole Microsoft infrastructure, you know, integrated with Adobe Lifecycle, integrated with Dataplan Journal Designer. So essentially all, and integrated, with the InDesign server. So the whole infrastructure is basically automating the pagination of these real estate books straight from, you know, sales folks just entering the data on the individual, homes that are going to be offered. And this content is being used to create both the web listings as well as the print catalog books or guidebooks that are being done in multiple states. It's saving hundreds of thousands of dollars in their production processes. And the DAM is an underlying technology within the architecture, and it works flawlessly. And it's open source. And so they save themselves, if you think about the amount of money they spent on the other infrastructure, they spent a fraction of their budget on the actual DAM implementation. The technologies, I think in some, there's a lot you could do with open source DAM solutions as underlying architectural decisions for larger projects and for very modest use cases around archival and retrieval of assets. You absolutely can use those types of solutions in your business.
And what advice would you like to share with DAM professionals and people aspiring to become DAM professionals?
You know, that's a great question, and I appreciate it, Henrik. A lot of folks come into this industry, and I should add, I've been doing this type of thing for 26 years now. I'm not going to count my tech jobs while I was in college, you know, which principally were around content technologies. But, you know, 26 years ago, content technologies were a whole different animal. To me, there's a lot of folks that enter the market and they want to be DAM professionals. They want to get jobs doing this. And my concern has been folks coming out there and never having laid their hands on a single product or having done a single implementation. So there's a lot of information that goes on, and there's a lot of folks there's no certification for becoming a DAM professional or a DAM analyst or consultant yet. People go out there and they, you know, help folks with RFPs and so forth, and they've never done a DAM project. So to me, if you're right out of college, first of all, there's some colleges which actually have some programs like RIT, the Print Management School. You know, they have a course in digital asset management. It is modest, but they give people a chance to understand how to install, how to configure, what are the important use cases trying to be solved in DAM. So getting hands-on experience with DAM, I think, is really important. You know, even if you never will touch the technology in your career, you want to be a pundit or someone who's just, you know, a thought leader, right? I think you got to be able to touch them and understand what these types of products, this class of products do, what problems do they solve. And, you know, that's just me. Other people would probably emphatically disagree, but I don't think going back to the plumber, you know, motif that I said earlier or concept, I don't think you can speak with authority about plumbing if you've never laid in the pipes and understand what the heck goes on there. I certainly don't understand what's happening behind the walls. So that's one thing. The second is, well, the best, to me, the really exciting folks out there are the folks who've gone to library science school. You know, they really fundamentally understand what information science or information architecture is. Like, how do you define a taxonomy? What is an ontology? How do you create controlled vocabularies? Like, what's that process? You know, sometimes folks that were in data modeling are very good at that as well. They're very thoughtful. A lot of times we go in as professionals and we over-engineer the model, the information architecture of a platform, and that becomes onerous for the folks who are trying to capture that metadata and track it. And so I think that there has to be a reasonableness that goes on, which again goes back to point number one, which is try to become a practitioner, but understanding that these are human systems, right? And that's the third thing. So again, we talk about first, laying your hands on these types of things. The second is understanding how taxonomy is laid out. If you have money to go to library science school, or if not, pick up some books on it. There's some great resources out there for that. The third thing is understanding the use cases or the workflows, because the dance systems don't necessarily do workflow really well, but every single person who is, or any company that is creating, managing, enriching, and delivering assets has implicit workflows, some that are simple, some that are very complex. And until you really understand, what those are, you're going to be really hampered. And I'm talking about not just people starting out in their career, but folks that are 10, 15, 20 years in that are delivering digital asset management implementations. A lot of times they don't pay attention to the way people interact with assets through the life cycle. And different asset or content types have different workflows. The way you're creating an interactive object is going to be different from, some sort of an image file or a video file and so forth. And so those have different ways of being manipulated through a whole class of employee types or user types. So understanding those is really important, because I think once you get those, and you're going to be more sensitive to the way people work. And, I think the fourth thing is understand how to listen and how to understand how people currently work, and meeting them halfway. That just coming in and implementing a DAM and saying, well, this is the way it works, it isn't good enough. To be able to understand how an organization needs to work is important, and to hopefully deliver a DAM solution that supports that work and bolsters and improves it, as opposed to makes people change the way they work, which invariably, as you and I both know, it doesn't work. People rebel, and you get into all kinds of change management issues where folks just they fight the DAM implementation. And I want to just end on this note that a good way to inform your career in DAM is that everybody high-fives themselves when the DAM installation is completed, but the way you test the success of a DAM solution is 2 to 3 years out. How many people are using it? How many assets are there? Is it supporting the business? Have duplication of assets been minimized or eliminated? Are there issues with finding assets that, were thrown in 2 years before that are important? That's the way you test. You always have to think forward, in this business. Think about the results you're going to be creating 2 to 3 years hence.
Well, thanks, Joe.
Cool.
For more on this and other digital asset management topics, log on to anotherdamblog.com. Another DAM podcast is available on Audioboo, iTunes, and the Tech Podcast Network. If you have any comments or questions, please feel free to email me at anotherdamblog@gmail.com. Thanks again.